The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
With the motto of learn to do by doing, 4-H offers a hands-on approach to learning in a safe, inclusive, and fun environment. There is a misconception, however, that 4-H is only for children and youth in rural communities with an agricultural background. Erica Jackson of Upper Stewiacke hopes to dispel this myth in her new 2-year term appointment to the Youth Advisory Committee with 4-H Canada. Ms. Jackson has joined the marketing and communications team and will be highlighting global happenings in agriculture in a biweekly blog. I would like to congratulate Erica Jackson on her appointment to the 4-H Canada Youth Advisory Committee and wish her all the best in this exciting experience.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. April 22nd to the 29th marked National Dance Week in Canada. And every year, Dance Nova Scotia celebrates...
Order, please. Time allotted for member statements has expired. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last year when the Liberals banned hydraulic fracturing, they did it without even knowing what it was. Documents obtained by the PC Caucus under the Freedom of Information Act show that Department of Energy staff frantically spent last December traveling the continent trying to find a definition of high-volume hydraulic fracturing. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier, why did he ban this new way of creating jobs when his own department doesn't even know what he has done?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the good people at Energy who work on behalf of all of us. Mr. Speaker, the exciting opportunities off the coast of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we've seen major investments by both BP and Shell. Those are all positive things to the province. As the Honourable Member would know, the Commission went around fracking without providing any long-term solution of how we deal with the fracking waste in this province. As he knows, as all members of this House should know, we have fracking waste existing in this province today that we can't get rid of. Mr. Speaker, we think it's prudent on behalf of government before we venture down that road of creating more of an environmental issue in this province that we know how to deal with it. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, this government is continuing to move forward to work with the private sector, to consult with Nova Scotians, and I want to remind the Honourable Member that in this province there's a duty to consult with First Nations, and that has not happened as of date.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, instead of just thanking the people that want to create jobs and opportunity in this province, why not give them the tools to actually go out and create new jobs, particularly in rural areas? The Premier's listed off a number of challenges. Of course, you're supposed to consult with First Nations. Of course, we have to find a way to deal with the wastewater. But, Mr. Speaker, where that government sees reasons to say no to new jobs, we see challenges to overcome so Nova Scotia can become a more prosperous place. That is the difference, Mr. Speaker, between them and us. Mr. Speaker, the Energy Department staff went to Alberta, BC, New York State, and many other places. All they had to do was ask Phil Knoll of Halifax what he thought. He would have said their ban makes no sense, and I'll table that. As the Premier of a province so desperate for jobs, how can he possibly justify creating a ban on new ways to create jobs, not even knowing what the ban actually is?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I again want to tell him about the positive things we're seeing in this province from the Energy Department, the offshore activity that's taking place. $2 billion has been, Mr. Speaker, is being invested in this province by two companies. That's good news for the people of this province of Nova Scotia. We're seeing positive signs around LNG, Mr. Speaker, both at Goldboro and Bearhead. We're seeing foreign countries wanting to invest, quite frankly, in this province, Mr. Speaker. That's good news. Mr. Speaker, we're seeing the resource sectors all across rural Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, being engaged and seeing an opportunity to create good jobs in this province. What our government has said, Mr. Speaker, we will take the appropriate time, the time required, to ensure that we protect the environment and we know how to deal with the fracking waste in this province if we're to proceed. And what we further said, Mr. Speaker, before we proceed, we believe that issue should be brought back to the floor of the legislature.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier is right about one thing. This province is full of opportunities. But what it has is a government that bans some of the new ways of creating jobs instead of going about the hard work of finding a way to make it happen, Mr. Speaker. And for all this opportunity, the fact remains that 18,400 rural Nova Scotians lost their jobs in the last 4 years. They want to see a government that finds a way forward, not putting roadblocks in their path. So how can the people of Nova Scotia, those 18,400, trust this government to promote jobs when they messed up the jobs in the film industry and they're banning new ones in onshore gas?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, I want to thank those on screen in Nova Scotia who came to work with our government to find a solution that works for taxpayers as well as for the industry, Mr. Speaker, to ensure those jobs continue to grow. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank BP and Shell for continuing to believe in this province. As world oil prices drop, Mr. Speaker, they continue to know where they should invest, and that's here off the coast of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. I also want to thank those who are investing in Bearhead, in Goldboro, and investing in LNG plants here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Those are all positive signs. Not to mention, Mr. Speaker, we're seeing an investment by Klein, Mr. Speaker, in Glace Bay. That's positive signs. Good jobs in rural Nova Scotia. The honourable member doesn't believe in supporting rural communities, Mr. Speaker. Stand up and say so instead of standing up and giving the political rhetoric he's been doing for the last 18
months.
The
honourable leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, Darlene Worth was supposed to have critical stomach and throat surgery, including a hernia repair on April the 22nd. For more than a year, Darlene has been suffering in pain, waiting for this surgery. In the last 6 months, she's been restricted to a fluids-only diet. The day before her surgery date, she was told her procedure was canceled and it could be more than 6 months before it's rescheduled. My question to the Premier is this: what is his government going to do to get people like Darlene the surgery she really needs to return to a healthy life as quickly as possible?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, Mr. Speaker, it is completely unacceptable that not only has her procedure been postponed, Mr. Speaker, but the fact that she's had to wait the length of time in this province to deal with it. We have wait times in this province that are unacceptable. It's why we've initiated this budget to invest to begin to move towards a national strategy. But, Mr. Speaker, there is a lot of work to be done. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, with the incident that has taken place more recently at our hospital here in Halifax around the sterilization of equipment, it has caused a great further burden on families across this province. It is completely unacceptable. It's why the Minister of Health is moving as quickly and as efficiently and as safely as possible to ensure that we return back to meeting the same number of surgeries we've been doing in the past and then deal with making sure that the backlog gets looked after, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Premier for his answer. Mr. Speaker, when the problem first went public, the Minister said the surgeries were elective, and I hope the public doesn't have the impression that they're not serious surgeries, Mr. Speaker. They are very serious surgeries. And yesterday we learned that new equipment the government is purchasing won't be here for at least 5 or 6 weeks. So that means even more surgeries will be cancelled. So I want to ask the Premier, how is the government going to deal with ongoing cancellations for these much-needed surgeries?
The Honourable Premier.
I'll ask the Minister of Health to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member opposite and former health minister who knows this issue very well for making it her first question of the day here during a question period. Every surgery, yes, we may sometimes categorize as elected, but they are indeed serious surgeries and ones that, of course, impact on not just the patient but also families. In going forward now, we have ordered the new new equipment. It will take some weeks. We are at 75% capacity of scheduled surgeries today. Yes, many have been postponed, and the plan now is to move surgeries to other sites across the province. Those that have been postponed are, if you wish, triaged, looked at each and every morning as to whether or not now they should be moved up into the surgical capacity of that particular day.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Minister of Health for his response. Mr. Speaker, today is April the 30th. It's 20 days after the public first learned that surgeries would be cancelled. And it was only a half hour before question period that we had the first briefing from the new CEO of the Health Authority on this very serious matter, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the Premier if he will commit to this House and to the people of the province that we will have regular and timely briefings as this problem persists in our healthcare system, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, first of all, I want to thank Ms. Knox for the work that she's been doing, Mr. Speaker. Thank the Minister for the work. I also want to thank those Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, who've been impacted by this situation, for their patience and the support as we move forward to ensuring that we get our facilities, healthcare facilities, up and operating at the capacity where they should be, that we deal not only with the cancellations that have taken place, but deal with the wait lists overall, Mr. Speaker. And I want to the response to the minister's or to the member's question, I want to say yes.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
My question is to the Premier. Over the past 10 days, hundreds of surgeries at the QE2 have been cancelled. Now, 10 days later, the government has discovered that these sterilization machines are 25 to 35 years old and at the end of their useful life. Well, Mr. Speaker, you know, when equipment reaches the end of its useful life, there is usually a plan in place to replace it in a timely way. I'd like to ask the Premier, why was there no plan in place to replace this equipment in a timely way?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. As you know, and the Minister has alluded to here, the age of that equipment is known by not only this government, by successive governments when it comes to delivery of services and equipment in the province. Mr. Speaker, that the equipment had been operating properly. This problem showed up and was dealt with immediately. We all know that as much as we want those surgeries to happen on time, we want to make sure that they're happening in a safe, sterile environment. They've responded that way. They've looked to find out whether or not this piece of equipment could have been repaired after they found out what the problem was. There was a decision made that equipment should be replaced, and then the process of doing so.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's going to take 5 or 6 weeks before the replacement equipment is delivered. That equipment will cost $100,000 each for 5 new machines, Mr. Speaker. When there's no plan in place to replace equipment in a timely way, the government is clearly being penny-wise and pound-foolish. This is not the only example, but now real surgeries are lost, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Premier, how many more surgeries are expected to be cancelled or delayed because there was no plan in place to replace this equipment?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to tell you that the Department of Health, the new health authority, are working as quickly as possible to ensure that the disruptions that are taking place have taken place, Mr. Speaker, mitigated, that we move forward, that we can have those surgeries put together, rescheduled. The Minister has just recently spoke. We're looking for capacity within the system across the province to make sure that positive things. But one thing for certain, Mr. Speaker, no matter what this side of the House has been able to do, they would have been complaining on the other side. If we had set money aside, they would have said we were spending too much money or preparing for a disaster, Mr. Speaker. Fact of the matter is, I'm very proud of the way the Minister, the new Health Authority, and Nova Scotians have responded, understanding, Mr. Speaker, this challenge will be looked after and we'll move forward, not only dealing with the backlog that's been created by this problem, but the backlog that has existed for quite some time.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Jessica Inkpen, who's with us here in the gallery today, has been in recovery since 2011 after suffering from anorexia for about 15 years. Jessica is very concerned about the McNeill government's cut to the eating disorder Nova Scotia and the eating disorder clinic at the IWK. Last week, the minister said he would review how these cuts are impacting services at the IWK. So I'd like to ask the minister, has the minister reviewed this issue yet? And if so, will he be restoring support for people affected by eating disorders?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that important question that he has brought to the floor of the legislature today. This week, I reviewed the program at the IWK because there was a 0.5 staff reduction. And what is taking place now is that we are moving the trauma-informed care out across Nova Scotia and doing more in the community work, and especially at our regional sites. And we know that's going to, again, improve the quality of care for those citizens who suffer, again, from a very terrible disease. But we will certainly review the health support groups that help maintain the treatments after they do go home.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, the investment has to be made to ensure that Nova Scotians, many of them, young women in Nova Scotia, get the help they need, Mr. Speaker, and it's not just 2 days a week, Mr. Speaker. Jessica says early intervention for people with eating disorder is very important. She's seen how community organizations like the Eating Disorder Nova Scotia have been impacted and how important it is as a stepping stone leading people to medical attention and recovery. She also highlighted recent report from the Butterfly Foundation, which notes optimal treatment interventions deliver a 5-to-1 benefit cost ratio for government investment. So given how important it is to early intervention, Mr. Speaker, with proper care, how can the minister justify eliminating support for people with eating disorders?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased that we recognize the value of the work done by Dr. Jana Davidson from BC Sick Children Hospital, and that we needed to have stronger trauma-informed care across the province. We're investing $1.1 million to advance the work of the IWK right out across Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia Eating Disorder Society, their organization is being funded at almost 80%, and we will review that particular grant during this fiscal year.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, Sandra Corbyn is here in the gallery with us today. She loves her job. 6 months ago, she was put off work while she waits for two knee replacement surgeries. She's 12 to 18 months away from receiving her much-needed surgeries. Sandra has worked as an educational assistant for 29 years and does not want to be missing work. This was not her choice. By the time she receives her surgery, she will have been off work for nearly 2.5 years. Sandra worries her job may not be held that long. My question for the minister is this. Has the minister approached his cabinet colleague, the Minister of Labour, to discuss solutions for people like Sandra, who are off work by no choice of their own and are fear losing their job to the very long wait times?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know that there's really two questions there. One relating to the orthopaedic wait time, as well as someone who was off work for a considerable period of time, and her place and certainly her career hanging in the balance. So first of all, in terms of the orthopaedic work, we did an additional 400 procedures last year. We will add another 400 this year. The orthopaedic community have given us a great plan going forward. It's just that a decade of getting behind has simply put us in a very bad spot where we are today.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, Sandra's situation is one of many Nova Scotians find themselves in as they wait months and years for surgeries. The Minister needs to realize these surgical wait lists impact more than a person's health. It impacts their livelihood, their well-being, and even our provincial economy. These Nova Scotians pay taxes and fund our health care system. It is unfair that something out of their control, like waiting for surgery, could take their livelihood. And I realize the Minister started to address this, but my question for the Minister is this. Will the Minister commit to examining this issue and developing a program so people like Sandra are confident their careers will not be lost due to long wait times for surgeries?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And yes, when we're talking about Sandra's career and her desire to continue to work, is a very, very important statement for her. And I know as a former school administrator, there are always extenuating circumstances around illness. And I know I worked for a board, and I believe the same one Sandra works for, that are very accommodating. We certainly hope that takes place. And we have a strong orthopedic plan in place. We'll add a foot and ankle specialist in the coming year. And we know that we'll be doing extra surgeries. We just have to keep on that pace to make sure that the needs of Nova Scotians are met.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Yesterday, a news release from the Mining Association of Nova Scotia said a survey of industry members found they are 98% less optimistic about the future of their industry as a result of this budget. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister, will the Minister admit that this is the result of the government failing to live up to his written promise to extend the fuel tax rebate to the industry?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Actually, what we're seeing from the mining industry are companies that want to invest in this province, that want to create good jobs in rural Nova Scotia. We are looking at the Donkin mine, Mr. Speaker, that when it comes online will double Nova Scotia's production in minerals. We're looking at Avalon Resources, who is looking at reestablishing a tin mine in Yarmouth, and all kinds of wonderful opportunities across this province, Mr. Speaker. And we will continue to work with that industry and provide the great opportunities that exist here in this province for them.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is apparent that the mining industry feels neglected after the decision not to extend the fuel tax rebate to the industry in this budget. The same survey found that 80% of respondents found the overall impact on industry was negative. Nova Scotia's mining and quarrying industry lost 800 jobs in the past 6 years. My question to the Minister, beyond the review of the Mineral Resources Act, what is the Minister's plan to grow this industry?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This industry is growing itself here in the province of Nova Scotia. We have, for the first time in 25 years, looked at the legislative framework that governs that industry, Mr. Speaker. The one thing that I've heard from the companies that are interested in doing business here is they want regulatory certainty, Mr. Speaker, and that is precisely what we're giving them.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and my question is to the Minister of Business. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister of Business told reporters that employees within his new department will not belong to a union because they need to be flexible and need to be able to respond to the needs of the department, and I will table that, Mr. Speaker. My question, can the minister tell us exactly how unionized employees within the Department of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Affairs are less flexible and less able to respond to the needs of those departments because they do belong to a union?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. I think what's important to note, Mr. Speaker, is that we absolutely respect the role and responsibilities of bargaining unit employees within Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Affairs. It's very clear under our government that they know their role. We have an objective of ensuring that they're focused on their role. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, the morale in those two departments is significant change. And it is because of our respect for those that work within the bargaining unit.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, this question goes to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. It's clear that employees being hired into the new Department of Business will be doing very similar work compared to their counterparts in all other government departments. So my question, Mr. Speaker, through you, according to the Civil Service Collective Bargaining Act, what is the rationale for excluding all positions in the new Department of Business from being unionized?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. My understanding is that this is a policy-based unit, not unlike the Office of Priorities and Planning, and for that reason, the employees are excluded. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
My question is for the Minister of Community Services. Today, the minister announced her intention to change the definition of a child from to include those 16 to 18, so they won't fall through the cracks. I was present at the bill briefing yesterday and really liked what I heard. The minister. The minister assured us that she was really going to concentrate on this act and to make it ironclad. Yesterday, the department informed us that there would be further consultation throughout the summer. So my question is, what is the wisdom behind waiting between now and fall to discuss it further?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, and I thank the member for the question. There's been 15 years of different consultations and 8 ministerial reports over the last 15 years, and we really wanted to make sure that the consultations were genuine, sincere, looking at all the best practices that other people, other stakeholders can bring to the table, and to work with our partners within the Mi'kmaq Family Services Association to look at the child welfare system within our Indigenous population in Nova Scotia. So we didn't want to rush it through. We wanted to be pragmatic with that, and that was really the genesis why we decided to have a summer of consultation.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Okay. We certainly all want this legislation to go through just as soon as possible. There's no question about that. But with further consultation, it opens up a door that maybe further changes will have to be made. So my question is, can the minister assure the House that the changes that she introduced today are going to be ironclad?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you. There are actually over 100 amendments to this Act. The specific ones that were talked about today are ones that are long overdue. We've had many stakeholders within the family services system in Nova Scotia demand them, including family foster families, child welfare boards, the Ombudsman's Office. We just want to make sure that all voices are heard. It will come back in the fall, and I'm confident that it will pass as the strong bill that it is today.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Recently, a number of currently working individuals, many from the Convergys Call Centre, which will be closing its doors for good in August, leaving 300 people out of work, went through an application process with Future Works in hopes to begin the CCA course. A written test and interview was conducted, and many had to take the day off without pay, when the odds were actually against them from the beginning, the odds being that they were employed and too qualified. Why would the minister's department, which funds this program, allow interviews to be conducted when these individuals don't meet the criteria to begin with?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not aware of the actual specifics of this particular case, but I would be happy to get back to the member with further information on that. Thank
the
you.
Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. With an aging population in Nova Scotia, CCAs are in high demand, and the CCA course through FutureWorks in Pictou County only accepts 20 students. Would the minister please commit today to review this program's interviewing process and also consider increasing the funds to the program so that those who desire to become a CCA can do so and work in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would be pleased to look into that particular issue for the member. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the film and television sector has thrived in Nova Scotia in large part because of the film tax credit. And our vibrant production community is why Halifax was selected as one of 3 national English language production centres in Canada for the CBC, along with Toronto and Vancouver. If the National Production Centre relocates to another province, it would take many jobs and many positive economic spin-offs with it. So my question for the Premier is this. What has the government done to ensure that the CBC National Production Centre does not leave Halifax as a result of changes to the film tax credit?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, as the Honourable Member would know, there is a lot of productions that happen inside of this province that do not take advantage of the film tax credit. She ought to know that, Mr. Speaker. What we have seen from the industry more recently is they come to the table to work with government to find a solution that works for taxpayers and works for the industry. We're very positive by the optimistic way they came to the table. Very pleased with the solution that not only will it secure the film industry here, Mr. Speaker, but it will broaden the benefit to Nova Scotians because we're moving from a labour tax credit of 50 to 65% to one of 25% that is a broad-based Nova Scotia investment, not only in labour, but all of the other aspects of a production, Mr. Speaker. That's good news for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, will I draw the Premier's attention to the 2008 socioeconomic impact study that I tabled that talks about why Halifax remained a national production centre chosen by CBC because of our strong, strong production studios and the films that were being made in this area. CBC has operated its television production studio out of Halifax since 1952. It's produced many of Canada's iconic TV shows, Sing Along Jubilee and what have you. Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Premier, what is the government going to do to ensure that the CBC National Production Centre remains in Halifax now that the film tax credit has been altered?
The Honourable Premier.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I too want to draw her attention to the report she tabled. I want to tell her that all the productions that are alluded to in that report, Mr. Speaker, were not there and did not take advantage and were not able to take advantage of the tax credit she so passionately talks about in this House. The reality of it is, Mr. Speaker, we can sit here and dispute numbers all we want. The fact of the matter is the screen Nova Scotia, the industry has come to the table, sit down with government to find a solution that works for taxpayers and works for the sector. We're seeing a broader benefit across not just for labour in the film industry, but broad-based support, Mr. Speaker. That's a good thing when we recognize the entire Nova Scotia content of films, Mr. Speaker, not just 50 to 65% of labour costs.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week I attended two meetings concerning the increase in fares charged on Nova Scotia ferries. One was in Neal's Harbour and the other was in Little Narrows. These increase in fees were supposed to be made to help with the recovery or return on the government's investment. Single fare rides went up $1.50. My question to the Minister of Transport is how much money does the Minister expect to recover with these increase in fares?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The total number is in about the range of, it's north of $700,000. I'm going to say it's about $725,000 per annum on the increases that have been spread across the seven ferry services we operate here in the province.
Thanks. The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks to the Minister for that question. The numbers I heard that the recovery part was only just over $1 million. As a $5 fare, so with raising it to $1.50 seems like that's a large number. My question is, if the ridership goes down and the so-called recovery of these fees is not met, what will be the department's next move? Will it further increase the rides, or will it put more money into the transportation budget for repair of the roads?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, we have projections about what the ferry fees will mean for the revenues that are brought in. But I'll tell you, we're expecting a pretty significant shift. When you look at the 10-packs, which was predominantly the method of tickets used by many Nova Scotians and the tourists who come here in the summer months to utilize the ferries, 8 of every 10 of those trips were subsidized directly, Mr. Speaker. One pass was $5.50. A 10 pass was $13.50. That is a subsidy that, in that particular item, makes absolutely no sense. We had to find an adjustment. So when we made adjustments to a more reasonable level in terms of what the cost recovery is, we think we'll see a migration, particularly for those residents who live in those regions, to the annual pass. We're going to look at a number of options to make that transition easier. But at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, this is a decision that we had to be made based on cost versus revenue. And we'll continue to talk to stakeholders about how we make it better. Thank you very much.
Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. Mr. Speaker, schools are expected to do more and do it differently. For example, taking on tasks that were normally or previously looked after by government agencies and departments like community services, health, and justice. My question to the Minister, will the Minister's action plan address these concerns?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. And I want to say to all members of the House that when we did our minister's panel and we heard from over 3,000 teachers, one of their main concerns was the variety of services that they were expected to provide to support the students in their class. And it had grown way beyond academics. It had grown into domestic concerns, mental health issues, personal problems and issues that bring themselves to the classroom and play themselves out there. And so our action plan is certainly designed to provide professional development and training and support for teachers so they can better respond to those many, many concerns and very valid concerns that our young people are now bringing to the classroom.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, we have teachers that will say it is unprofessional to complain, question, or criticize. Recent editorial pieces appear to suggest that this feeling does exist within the teaching profession. My question to the Minister, have these complaints reached the Minister's department? And if so, what advice does the Minister have for these teachers?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I must say, Mr. Speaker, that it is a sad commentary if we do have, as the member says, and I'm not questioning what the member is saying, but if we do have teachers who do not feel that they can express their opinion, that the door is always open. I can tell every teacher in this province, my door is always open. I will listen to those teachers, and I will try to help them.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, there's a public meeting about the future of Cape Breton rail line scheduled for tomorrow in Sydney. In an article in the Cape Breton Post, according to Dave Ray, a dean of the Shannon School of Business at Cape Breton University, and I quote, "Not much information has trickled out of Nova Scotia's transportation minister," end quote. In today's editorial, titled "Future of Rail," the Cape Breton Post staff writes, and I quote, "Friday's meeting has the potential to be a vague or unproductive. It has also the potential to be the opposite," end of quote. And I'll table those documents. My question, Mr. Speaker, what is the Minister of Transportation's plan to ensure the people at the Friday's meeting receives clear information about his department on this issue?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Dean David Ray from the Shannon School of Business developed a committee. Basically, it was a community society to talk about what the future is of rail. Among other parts of his mandate for this particular group, the focus is on if there was a community rail option, what would that look like, where would investment come, etc. Our group, the Minister Advisory Committee on Rail, is looking at the bones of the system in terms of assets, liabilities, intermodal transportations, those types of things. Our committee, myself, we've been entirely open. We've answered every media call on every component. I talked to Dean Ray directly. Any information that they need will be provided. For tomorrow's meeting, my Deputy Minister, Paul LaFleche, will be there, and he will give them absolutely every shred of data, information, and direction that we have. Thank
you.
The
Honourable Member for Queen Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Cape Breton Rail Line is a basic building block of the island's future economic development. Yesterday, in question period, the minister said, and I quote, "This isn't about a long-term subsidy. This is about the building a business case for the people of Sydney, the people of Cape Breton," end of quote. Mr. Speaker, my question, how much of a subsidy is the minister willing to offer the rail line as the people of Cape Breton build their business case to keep this vital transportation link?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, this is not about a long-term subsidy. This is about the future of Cape Breton and the people of Cape Breton and Nova Scotia and the economy. What we've said from the beginning is that we would work with partners, all levels of government, which are at the table at our advisory committee, the stakeholders, particularly those private sectors operators who utilize the line, every shred of information we can find, all data, all supports, Mr. Speaker. What we want to do from the beginning, this is a bigger piece. This is about the future of Cape Breton. It's about the economy and its development. The port is going to be a significant part of that. That's why this rail conversation is important. As we said, this is about sustainability and stability from a private sector operation. We'll continue to work to that endeavour. We want to save the rail line, Mr. Speaker, but we want it to be able to stand on its own 2 feet and make sure that's the private sector driving that operation. Thank you very much.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Last session, I had the opportunity to ask the Minister of Health about oral medications for chemotherapy for those who are eligible. He informed me at that time that the department was looking into it, and he would be meeting with stakeholders like CanCertainty and other stakeholders early in the new year. The Minister said, quote, "We will have that timeline and that cost available for all Nova Scotians to see early in the new year." So my question to the Minister is, this measure was not included in the budget that was presented to us, and we have not received any information as of yet by the Minister. Will the Minister provide an update on whether his department will allow at-home cancer treatments for those who can receive it?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And at the present time, we have reached out to ministers across the country to work first with the existing federal government. But we know there's a lead in Ontario with Dr. Hoskins speaking to all the federal parties about the development of a national pharmacare program. And with an election pending, it seems that parties, in fact, are putting some meat on the bones around a national pharmacare program, which would impact on our oral cancer treatments.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And the Minister communicated his support for this option a number of times in this House, recognizing the hardship faced by many Nova Scotians when they receive that cancer diagnosis. The potential savings from at-home cancer medications would be a great benefit to our healthcare system, and the money would be redirected to frontline care. Most importantly, we could ease the pressure on families who have loved ones who may be traveling back and forth here to Halifax in many cases, or in hospital for long periods of time to receive that treatment. And I know it's a long-term game when you're talking about a national pharmacare program, so I'm hoping that the Minister might have some data on how to make this happen in the short time. Do you have some data on that or not, Mr. Minister?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
I thank the member opposite for the question, and again, a former health minister who understands that oral cancer treatments are not included in the Canada Health Act. Therefore, provinces have to pick up the cost. And what I can say is that currently, all those who are getting oral cancer treatments at home in Nova Scotia are funded in a number of different ways. The province currently puts in about $11 or $12 million to that, and we know that there are other oral cancer treatments that we will put on the formulary and that Nova Scotians will benefit from.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, in Cape Breton in the 1970s and 80s, and Mr. Speaker, I know we wouldn't remember that, 1.2 million hectares of woodland were destroyed by the spruce budworm. Unfortunately, 3.2 million hectares of woodland have been affected by the spruce budworm in Quebec in recent months. And I'll table that in a few minutes, Mr. Speaker. Spokesman for the Department of Natural Resources states the spruce budworm is working his way toward us. My question to the Minister: what is the department doing to protect Nova Scotia forests from spruce budworm?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that question. The spruce budworm is at its point in the life cycle where it will come back to Nova Scotia. Our department has been engaged in preparations for that event for some time now, and we currently have the advantage of seeing the activities that are going on in New Brunswick and Quebec where they were dealing with an outbreak of the spruce budworm. We are working closely with our partners to prepare and learn from the best practices that are out there.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think the Minister and I agree that we're not going to put a welcome sign up for the budworm for sure in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the budworm has been found just 25 kilometres outside of the New Brunswick border. Only Cape Breton forests were affected last time when there was a significant outbreak of spruce budworm in Nova Scotia. There are fears this time the pest could branch out from Cape Breton. Question to the Minister. Will the Minister provide a timeline to give woodlot owners confidence that the Department has a plan to protect their lands?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We've been working directly with the industry and private woodlot owners on this particular file to keep them up to speed. In terms of timeline, we're probably about 2 years away from a return of the spruce budworm to Nova Scotia. Our department is actively engaged in all pursuits to prepare for that and to ensure that the damage that comes, because there will be some damage, Mr. Speaker, that is undeniable, and we cannot escape that, but we will be prepared to mitigate that damage to the best of our ability.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 2012, the province announced funding for a new high school for Eastern Passage so that students would no longer have to travel to Cole Harbour. And I will table that, Mr. Speaker. But last week, the Minister of Education suggested that the school may not go forward, telling CBC that if a school board says it's not a priority for them, then we'll have to sit down and take a look at that. And I will also table that, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the Minister of Education is this. What can she tell parents in Eastern Passage about who are concerned that they will lose their new school?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I can tell the people in Eastern Passage, the same as I told everybody when I did my interviews, that a new school was announced for Eastern Passage prior to us coming into government. When we formed government in October of 2013, we said that we would honour the commitments that had been made by previous government, and we intend to do that.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the I thank the Honourable Member for her response. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Education has said that it was a political decision for the previous government to commit to a new school, but at the time of the announcement from the Herald story I just tabled, Chris Peters, an Eastern Passage parent, said, "Now our kids won't have to wait in the school bus lineup at 6:30 a.m. So since approximately 500 students are currently bused to Cole Harbour each day, what assurance can the Minister actually give us that they will receive a school of their own?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just did.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of TIR. Today, Nova Scotians learned that the Nova Star Ferry has accessed nearly half of the $13 million committed to by government for this year in just 4 months. In a press release, the Minister of Transportation expressed concern that Nova Star may not meet its financial goals and he may have to move to a Plan B. So my question for the Minister is it possible that 4 months in, Nova Scotians will have to add to the $13 million already committed to Novastar to keep the service going this season?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank the Honourable Member for the question. What we announced today was an adjustment from an RFP, which would be the traditional request for proposals, to an alternative procurement model that gives us flexibility, that doesn't restrict us the timelines, and that gives our department and our government the opportunity to dive deep into the issue, to look at the Yarmouth Ferry from the business model with operations, marketing, the vessel, those types of things. What I can tell the Honourable Member of the House and all Nova Scotians, we've made the commitment for this year. $13 million is on the table for Nova Star. Every indication from their officials is that things are looking good. There's been a recovery in the market. Ridership and bookings are up. The demographic identified through the marketing endeavors in the northeastern United States has been working. Mr. Speaker, we'll take their word for it, but at the end of the day, we want to have the flexibility as a government to ensure the most important thing, that there's continuous service that's stable for the people of Nova Scotia, and we'll get there. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, we know that this is a very important transportation link to that end of the province, and we agree with it that there was an ill-conceived notion by a former government to do away with the service to begin with. Mr. Speaker, the challenges with the Novastar have been long-standing and have been expensive. The minister himself said, we've spent a lot of money so far, and we fully expect that the company will meet their financial goals. And, Mr. Speaker, I'll table that. At the same time, he indicated that he intends to move to a non-competitive procurement policy. It's a possibility. So I guess my question would be, what happened? Like, is the RFP not ready to go, or should Nova Scotians be bracing themselves for another Novastar emergency infusion of cash?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No, that's not the case at all. What we looked at with a traditional RFP, you have a very rigid set of parameters, Mr. Speaker. There's 30 days to file the RFP, to have to receive bids and submissions from all across the province, the country, the globe, Mr. Speaker. And at the end of the day, we need control of this operation. We've learned a lot over the last number of years. We're understanding the business model. We know where the market is. We understand what it needs for the operational side, for the marketing side, and, of course, to increase the ridership. Mr. Speaker, we're going to understand from experts in the community, in Yarmouth, on international level, what we need, what's the right fit, and we're not going to close that and restrict that by any means. Mr. Speaker, we're responsible for this file. We're going to do a good job. We're going to ensure that for the people of Yarmouth, the people of Nova Scotia, that this operation is sustainable and viable for the long term, and we're going to continue to do that, Mr. Speaker, and the control is in our hands, and we're glad to take that on for the people of Nova Scotia. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Last week, in estimates, we learned that the planned dialysis and hospice at Valley Regional Hospital would be housed in separate buildings. Construction season is now underway. The community expected this announcement in 2014, frankly. And my question for the minister is, when will the shovel hit the ground on the new hospice at Valley Regional?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to inform the member opposite that yes, this is a project long overdue. There's been great community commitment for the project. We essentially had to uncouple it from the hospital itself in terms of having it join. And I think the concept that we have arrived at now is actually the original concept that the committee and the people of the Valley started out with. It will be before Treasury Board in the next few days. So
order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members. The ministers have expired. Just before we move on to government business, the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, could I make an introduction?
Permission granted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to draw the attention of members of the House to a guest in our West Gallery, who is here today, who I made reference to during question period. Her name is Darlene Worth. I would like members to give her a warm welcome to our legislature.
The Honourable Government House Leader.
Speaker, I move that you now leave the chair and that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole House on bills.
The House will now recess for a few minutes while it resolves itself into the Committee on Whole House on Bills.